We're diving into a new series today, and just to let you know, this series will roll into another series. They're kind of all related. I've been reading a lot of books and a lot of content, and so I really hope that from here till about mid-June that you're here, and even if you can't be here, that you'll keep up to date either online or through our podcast. But I'm really excited to dive into this, and I want to start with a question, and I posted this question online this week. But my question is this: what does winning look like to you? What does winning look like to you? I posted this on my Facebook because I wanted to see people's answers. And I said, hey, come on, give me your answers in the comment section. And this is what I got back. I had people tell me things like, well, being a good parent, a loving marriage, living life to the fullest, family, friends, and children. And I got a couple different answers here or there, but this was the gist of what I got. This is what I got a big part of. And the reason I asked this question, the whole thing that inspired this series, was a conversation I had with a friend last summer. I sat down with my friend, and I got lunch with him. And my friend, I can't even tell you who he is because he's so well known in our community. You'd probably even have heard his name or you'd know who he is. But we sat down and we had a lunch. And this guy, man, let me tell you something. He's successful. He runs a company. He's got a wife, he's got kids, because of the position that he has in his company, I know he makes a ton of money. He's even a good looking guy, in my opinion. He kind of has it all. He kind of got it all going for him. So anyway, we sit down and we start riffing and stuff. And I don't even remember how we got on this subject, but he turns to me and he goes, you know, all throughout high school, I was an athlete and I won. I won championships, I won tournaments, I did all that. I went to college, I was an athlete, I won championships, I won tournaments, I was MVP, all of this stuff, won all these scholarships and different things. And, you know, then I met my wife, and so I got the girl, you know, and I married her. And then I started, you know, in this company, and I came up in this company, and now here I am, and I'm running this company and stuff. And, you know, I've got all, you know, this influence and all of this power and stuff. And, you know, then we had our two kids. And so I got these two beautiful kids and stuff. And you know, again, he's leading, listing off this resume of successes, right? Things that we would consider just awesome and winning and all this stuff. And then he says this, and I'm partly pastor paraphrasing, but when I got in the car, it stayed with me. This is what he said. But now I've got nothing else to win. And for all the winning I've done, I kind of feel like a loser. I went, wow, really? Really? And you just heard me list off all of these things. You're thinking to me like, man, that guy's got an awesome life. You know, if you're a teenager or you're 20 something, you're going, man, that right there, that's what I want. Like what that guy has, I'll take a slice of that. That sounds awesome. Because, so many of us, we think, man, like winning, we think, man, power and marriage and family and friends and wealth and health, that's a pretty awesome list of achievements right there. That's a pretty awesome list of things to acquire and things to have. And yet, if you ask him if he's winning at life, he says he feels like a loser. He even went on to describe how at times he's anxious, stressed out, burnt out, overwhelmed, even at times depressed. Now, again, if you're young and you're sitting here, you're going, why in the world would he feel like that when he has all of these things he's acquired and he's possessed? But yet, some of you who are millennials, who are in that age range between 30 and 50, you kind of feel how he feels, don't you? Because it doesn't matter what the promotion looks like or the job. It could be going well for a short time, but then it's not very fulfilling. You've got all these achievements. You've got these kids. You've got this spouse. You've got this family. Your family lives close to you. You get together. You do family things together. You got to see him last Easter and stuff, but yeah, still doesn't feel very fulfilling. You're still anxious, you're still burnt out, you're still overwhelmed, you still at times have anxious thoughts, or you're even depressed, or still at times you feel like a loser, right? And the older generation, a generation older than millennials, you hear this talk a lot, right? I mean, let's have a very honest conversation. You hear this talk of, you know, things about anxiety and depression, and it's kind of talked about a lot, and everybody, you know, has a label. Oh, I have anxiety, I have stress, I have depression, all this stuff. And let's be honest, the older generation, you guys hear that and you go, oh, cry me a river, son, right? Oh, my goodness. Oh, you're married and you have kids and you have a great job and you make all this money and you got to go to Disney last world. Oh my goodness. Shut up. Stop being such a baby. Pull your pants up and move on with your life. Wipe those tears off. And look, I understand it. There's been this generational gap where the older generation, you don't understand why this is being talked about so much. Back in your day, this wasn't talked about as much. But there's actually a reason for that. There's a reason why there's been this gap. There's been a change. And to get ready for this series and our next series, which our next series is going to be all about burnout, which is why these two are going to connect so well, I've been reading a book called The Burnout Society. And it's written by a German philosopher about 10 years ago who was trying to identify the changes that were going on in the world socially and in the mental health field with our world. And he talked about how there was a point in which things started to change in our society. And he says what happened was as we went from a disciplinary society to an achievement society. So let me tell you the difference between these two. So a disciplinary society, they ask themselves the question, they talk about what they should do, okay? So go ahead and put that on the screen for me, what they should do. So they, when they think about things, they think about the shoulds, should or should not. So if they are, you know, they have a car and they go, should we buy a new car? Why would we buy a new car? The one that we have is running just fine. Should we upgrade our phones? Well, what's wrong with the phone that you have in your hand right now? No, we shouldn't upgrade our phones. That's a silly question. Should we get a bigger TV or a new thing? Why? The thing that we have isn't broken. It's completely fine. No, we don't need to do that, right? They asked the question of should. It's very yes or no, very minimal, very black and white. Should we? Should you quit your job? Why would you quit your job? You're making the amount of money you need to make in order to pay your bills. You have benefits. You have Social Security. You have retirement. You have all this stuff. No, you should not quit your job. Hey, this Friday night, they're asking us if we can come over. Should we accept the invite? Why would we accept the invite? We already have something on the schedule. Little Timmy has a soccer game Friday night. No, we shouldn't tell them that we should be there. As a matter of fact, even if Timmy didn't have a soccer game, we had something two nights previously before, and we don't need to do that to our schedule. That's too many things. So no, we should not. It's about the question of should we. Now, here's the thing. When it comes to an achievement society, we ask ourselves, what can we do? Not what should we do, what can we do? See, when it comes to the car question, it's not should we buy a new car, it's can we buy a new car? Can we afford the payments? Can we afford the loan? Can we afford to upgrade the phone? Can we afford to upgrade the TV? I mean, if we can, then why wouldn't we? Or, you know what? Can we quit our job? I mean, let's think about a way we can work it out. If I do this and I do that, and then I have this side hustle and I do this and that, I think we can make it work. You ever said that in your home? I think we can make it work. I think we can find a way to make it work. You know, that invite that came about Friday night, I know little Timmy has a soccer game, but I think we can make it work. And, you know, so if we go to, you go with Timmy to his soccer game, and I'll go with little Billy to his T-ball game. And then afterwards, we'll meet in the middle and we'll switch car seats. And then I'll go to the other thing and you go to this thing. And then, you know, we'll eat in the car. And yeah, no, I think we can make it work. I think we can. See, our generation is constantly trying to figure out how we can make it work, how we can afford it, how we can maneuver our way through it. And yeah, I think we can. And after all, millennial generation, we grew up and our parents, or Gen X, really fostered this kind of society. I mean, remember growing up, we were told things like this. You can do anything you put your mind to. You can be anything you want to be. You can. You just got to figure it out. You've just got to find a way. You just got to pull yourself up and do it and grind and hustle, and sure you can. So see, there's a big difference between these two. Because the disciplinary society, they ask themselves a different question. Go to that next slide for me. They ask themselves, should we do that? And the achievement society, they ask themselves, can we find a way? And again, if you're between the ages of 30 and 50, there's this thing inside of us that was taught to us, that was kind of fostered, of find a way to be all that you can be and have everything that you could possibly have, every opportunity, everything that you're looking for. We wrestle with this thing where we ask ourselves, is there a way, can we be the best spouse, the best parent, the best friend, who's the most fit, with the most money, with the best things and the most success? Can I be at the top of the leaderboard? Because average is not enough, right? Average is not enough. It's not about having a roof over your head. It's about what the roof looks like. So can we find a way to not just have a roof, but a spectacular roof? It's not enough to have a working car. Oh, it's got to be the car. It's not enough to have a TV. You got to have a TV, right? So let's find a way to have all the things and possess all the things and own all the things. But then wait, we also have to be the best parent. So we've got to provide the kids with the best opportunities, because there's this temptation in all of us. It's not enough to just be a good parent and take care of your kid. You got to give them the world, right? So you got to give them the best vacations and the best opportunities and the best things, and whatever you got to do to help them get there, you're going to do it. If we got to take different cars, different places and shift our schedules and things, oh, of course we're going to do it. But then also, don't forget, we've also got to be the best spouse. And so I got to be the best spouse, and I got to look a certain way, and I've got to be skinny enough, and I've got to be fit enough, and I've got to have a certain kind of image. And we grew up in this society where what was told to us, what was encouraged by us, were little things like this. Again, you've heard all these things. Where there's a will, there's a way. Can't isn't a word. You can do anything you set your mind to. Failure is not an option. And don't ever pass up on an opportunity. Or let's even say, don't pass up on a good deal. It's on sale. See, the thing is, though, is that in this achievement-based society of this race and this chase to be all the things and to have all the things, a lot of times we end up not being winners, but losers. And see, and here's the thing. If you're between the ages of 30 and 50, you know this chase. You know this battle. You fight for this every day. But here's the other thing. For those of you who are in your 20s or even your teens, this is what stresses you out. Because the thing is that this millennial generation is leading the way, and you look up to us and you go, oh my goodness, look at them. They have power. They're married. They have a great house. They have 2, 3, 4 great cars with a camper attached to it, by the way. They've got all of these amazing things, all of these great opportunities. They've got kids. They've got wealth. They've got health. Oh my goodness. That means that's success. That's winning. And that's what I got to have too. And all these young people and all these teenagers, they look at that list and they go, okay, so that's what I've got to acquire. And okay, so I got to be married, and I got to have kids, and I got to have a career, and not just any career. It can't just be something average. It has to be something great. It has to be something huge. I need power. I need success, and I need to make X amount, and I need to have this nice of an apartment, or this nice of a house, and this nice of a car, and I got to have all of it before the age of 30. And so there's this like overwhelming feeling of like there's this time clock on this thing, and I got to have this before the age of 30, because that's what they did. That's what my parents did. That's what these people who I look up to, that's what they're doing. And all these people on social media, that's what they're doing. And so I've got to do it, but I'm only 27 and I only have 3 years left. that's where they break. And that's where the anxiety sets in. As a matter of fact, I said that first service and I had two teenagers walk up to me between services and say, that is my biggest fear in life. Is I look at my parents and I look up to some of you and I think these are all the things I have to have. And it's not enough to just have them. I have to have the best of it and I have to be the best and it has to look a certain way. And I'm scared to death that I won't be able to do it and I won't be able to figure it out by the time I'm your age. Tell me when I'm lying. So the thing is that something happened. And in this book, Burnout Society, there's a psychologist who talks about where there was an uptick. And this is what she says. She says, depression began its ascent when society invited us to undertake personal initiative to be all that we can be and to do all that we can do. And then next, she says this. But when the individual is unable to measure up or runs out of achievements to chase, he becomes tired and ultimately depressed. And this is what a lot of you who are the same age as me or the same age as my friend are feeling today. And it's why young people, when you think about this mountain that you have to climb and how in the world you're going to get there, when you start to get in the thick of it and you can't figure out your career, you can't figure out what degree you want, you're single and you can't find anybody and you're not married and you're not having kids and you feel like the clock is just ticking, you have this internal feeling of feeling like my life isn't good enough. And look, I get it. I get the grind. I get the hustle. So somebody asked me again between services. So are you saying that, you know, the disciplinary society is better than the achievement society? No, I'm not saying that at all. There's goods and bads to each generation, each society. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is that we have a huge problem. We have a huge problem because right now, what is going on in our culture and in our world, and this is, again, this is an American problem. This is not even a world problem, but specifically Americans are going through this. Psychologists and sociologists are racking their brain and gathering together frantically because they're trying to figure out what's happening in our world because they're finding that statistically, this Gen Z, this age of 20-somethings right now, they are the most depressed, stressed out, anxious-ridden, suicidal generation in American history. And they're trying to figure out what in the world is going on and how in the world can we fix it? Because if this generation is like this, then they believe that Gen Alpha and what follows will likely be the same. So again, I'm all for hustle, I'm all for grind, I'm all for some of this stuff, but can I even be transparent with you for a minute? I mean, I'm a hard worker. I'm all about the grind. And I'm going to share with you my story over the next 12 weeks because you're talking to a guy who just a couple months ago didn't pastor one church but two churches, who coaches CrossFit and competes in CrossFit, who has a wife with a career who also competes in CrossFit, kids that go to jiu-jitsu practice multiple times a week. I mean, we do all the things. And, you know, again, I'm a lot like my friend. We have power, we have influence, we have family, we have wealth and health and all this stuff. But yet, when Kate and I most often talk to each other and I ask, hey, how are you doing? How are you feeling? How's your day going? The number one word that we use most often in our house is tired. And it was funny, between services, just standing out in the lobby, I heard three people say the same thing. How are you doing? I'm tired. How's it going? I'm tired. Is that normal? Should it be normal? All the running around and all the schedules to keep and all the things that we're trying to be. If the end result is tired, If the end result isn't feeling like a winner, it's feeling like a loser. If the end result is that our millennial generation is leading a generation to be the most depressed, anxious-ridden, and suicidal generation in American history, then maybe, just maybe, this needs to be addressed. So, I want to give you a question today. I want to give you a question that I think can help you find out what being a winner is actually supposed to be. I think that it's a question that kind of sets you up on a path to have and feel what you really want, what you really want to feel. I think it's a question that sets you up in a position to succeed. And it comes from the book of Nehemiah. It's in your Old Testament. And the book of Nehemiah is really interesting to me because it's literally the journal of Nehemiah. And there's no miracles in it. It's just a practical story of the decisions. It's really a leadership lesson. The entire book of Nehemiah is really a leadership lesson on how to handle a difficult situation. And so he writes it, and it predates when the Jewish Bible was written. But when they found it and when they saw it, it fit with their history and it was important. And they included it in the Old Testament. And then when the Old Testament was combined with the New Testament, that's why we have it today. And so it's from Nehemiah, and he was a Jew. But what had happened at this point in Jewish history was, you know, the Jews, the descendants of Abraham, they had a covenant with God, right? And so they were in Israel, and they were the kingdom of Israel, and then they broke that covenant. And so God exiled them and allowed people to come in and invade. And so Israel was split in half. There was the north kingdom and the south kingdom, and the south kingdom was known as Judah. And so the Babylonians come in, and they invade, and they tear down the temple. They burn down the gates of the city. They just jack up Jerusalem. And all of these Jews, they flee, they're exiled, they're kicked out of their homes, and they go all over. And basically, the kingdom of Israel was shut down for 70 years. Then the Persians come in, and the Persians overtake the Babylonians, and now they're in charge. And so 90 years go by, and all these Jews are scattered all over the countryside. And so the Persians go, what in the world, what's going on with all these Jews? They're all over the place. Tell you what, why don't we tell them to go back home? Go back where you came from. And go back to Jerusalem. And so they do. Thousands and thousands of Jews go back home. And what they find is that their temple's destroyed. Their city gates are burned down. There's people living where they lived. So now there's race problems and there's all these different things. The economy is just in shambles. And it's a big mess. Big, big mess. Nobody really knows how to fix it. And so then Nehemiah steps into the scene, and Nehemiah was the assistant to the Persian king. So although he was a Jew, he was honored with this great position, and he was basically number two to the most powerful man in the world at that time. And so this is his journal, and this is what he says. We're going to pick it up at the very beginning in verse 2. He says, "Now Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men, and I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem." So Nehemiah's brother comes through where he's in the middle of the city where the Persians were. And he goes, "Hey brother, how's it going? How's it going rebuilding Jerusalem and our culture and our economy and putting things back together again?" And this is what he says. He says, "They said to me, those who survived the exile and are back from the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire." So they go, it's not going great. Things have been destroyed. It's a mess. There's disgrace. There's so many problems. The economy is such a mess. We don't even know where to start. And so once he hears this report, this is what Nehemiah says. He says, "When I heard these things, I sat down and I wept." It broke his heart. There was something about this that stirred him up that he thought, "Oh, that's awful. That's terrible. I can't. Oh, it shouldn't be this way. I thought whenever they were going to be allowed to go home that this were my expectations, and none of that's coming true. Wow. Oh, man." I mean, it tore him up. And it says next, "For days I mourned and I fasted and I prayed before the God of heaven. So he goes to God with his concerns and he starts to pray to God. And over the next few verses, he writes out his prayer. And in his prayer, he says, you know, God, I understand why this happened. I understand that we broke our covenant with you. It all makes sense to me. I understand. And this is what it is. But man, my people are hurting. My people are disgraced. My people, they have this huge burden on their back. And then he asks something of God. And then he says this. He says, Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. So he's about to ask God something big. So he's setting this up and he's like, Lord, hear my prayer. Be attentive to this because I'm about to do something and I'm really, really scared. This is a huge risk. This is a huge sacrifice. And then he says this. He says, give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. And he writes in his journal, in case anybody ever read it, he says, see, I was cupbearer to the king. So this is what he does next, what he was asking God's help with. He goes to the king and he says, King, may I have a leave of absence and go back to Jerusalem to help my people? I would like to rebuild the temple. I would like to fix the city gates. I would like to address the economy. And I just feel like it's my call to go back and to help my people. Now, this was a huge sacrifice. Why in the world would this man do this? I mean, he's second to the most powerful man on the planet. He is set up for life. He is taken care of. He makes money. He is winning. Why in the world would he do this? And the answer is found in the question that I think you should ask yourself. It's the question that if you follow it, I think could lead you to actually feeling like a winner. And the question is this: what breaks your heart? What breaks your heart? What is it that breaks your heart? When you hear it, when you hear about it, when you see it, you go, that's awful. Man, that shouldn't be that way. Oh my goodness. I can't believe that happened. It's the thing you share with somebody. You send them the message. You DM them. Did you see this? Did you see that this happened? Did you see that it happened again? Did you know that they felt this way? Man, this is terrible. I hate when that happens. Man, it just shouldn't be that way. It's the things that stir up your emotions. When you see them in the news, when you see them in social media, you think to yourself like, man, no, dude, somebody needs to do something about that. It shouldn't be like that. Somebody needs to step in. You know, we need to throw some money towards that. Like there, something has to happen. And typically what happens is it starts to stir you up and you and your friend or you and your wife or whomever, you're like, man, yeah, that's bad. I can't believe that. And you feel this nudge to step in. You feel this nudge to say something about it, to advocate for it, to be part of the solution. But then you start to talk yourself out of it and you go, well, I mean, somebody should do something about it. It's not me. I don't. I wish I could. I wish I had the resources. I wish I had the time. I mean, who am I? I'm too young. I'm too old. No, you know what? I'll tell you what I'm about. I'm going to write Pastor an email. Pastor can take care of this. Not me, but Pastor can. Or you know what? This is why we need a new president. This is why this election, I hope so-and-so gets elected because we need somebody to take care of this. You know, this is why, I tell you what, the school needs to step up. That's what these teachers in these school, I don't know what they're doing, but you know, they really ought to do something about this. I'm going to write this on the We Love Troy page. You know, I'm going to the We Love Troy page and somebody needs to figure out why in the world KFC keeps closing down this week. It's just really jacking me up. And the Taco Bell being so slow, and why don't we have a Lowe's or a Home Depot? I mean, Hecklers is missing so many of those screws. But anyway, you know, but you know, we just do it. And you know what happens? What we start to do is we start to play the blame game, right? The blame game. Where we start to go, you know, this generation, you know, blah, 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 blah. Nobody wants to work anymore. I tell you what, you know, nobody wants a job. Nobody wants to work, blah, blah, blah. They're just always on their cell phones, you know. Yeah, I tell you what, you know whose fault this is? It's the Democrats. That's who it is.
It's the Democrats. That's who it is. You know? And we play this blame game and we just sound old and crotchety. And, you know, it's just great fun to do with Uncle Bill at Thanksgiving. You know what I mean? And we just sit there and we scratch our bellies and we point our fingers, you know, and we post our stuff online. And now we're in a whole new sphere of things, right? Playing the blame game, telling Alderman Hakeem he needs to fix this and all kinds of things, you know, and stuff. And here we go, round and round and round and round. But here's the thing. And again, this is so important. I've sat at so many tables. I've sat at tables with pastors have just moaned and complained and just done all kinds of vile stuff, why their church isn't growing, and oh, this generation. Blah, blah. I've sat with people who wanted to talk politics, and they've, oh, this party, and oh, this president, and oh, this senator and stuff. I've sat in PTA meetings and stuff where they've just blasted the school, and it's the principal's fault, and it's the school district's fault, and blah, 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 blah. Here's the thing. Here's the thing when it comes to the blame game. Blame is not a strategy for changing things. Blame is a strategy for avoiding things that need changing. You're not doing anything. If you're a business owner, if you're a leader, if you're a pastor, if you're a person of influence, if you're a civil servant and all you want to do is sit there and moan and complain about whose fault it is, you ain't changing nothing. You're just creating toxic conversation. You want to just stir the pot. You want to just stir up people's emotions. You want to just throw mad anger at it and hate at it. Look, you're not doing anything. You're not changing anything. You're not addressing anything. Maybe that feeling inside of you should cause you to step up and to step out and to do something about it. What is it that breaks your heart? Let me ask you this question a different way. What would you like people to line up and thank you for at the end of your life? At the end of your life, if you knew when it was going to be and you had a moment where you could sit in a chair or stand there and have people line up, your coworkers, your church friends, your sphere of influence, your community, your neighborhood, whoever it might be. If you could stand there and people one by one would come up to you, look you in the eye, shake your hand and say, thank you. Thank you. Because of you, fill in the blank. What would that fill in the blank be? What would it be? And again, I'm not talking about your spouse. I'm not talking about your kids. Because look, that's all self-serving, okay? Being a great spouse, being a great parent is not an achievement. It's a responsibility. You should just do that. But what would you want people to come and thank you for and say, look, you took care of your responsibilities, but this, you did this for me. Because of you, I was able to. What would you want that to be? Let me ask the question a different way. If you could push a button and change one thing in the world, what would it be? If you could push a button and it would change or it would go away or it would be different, what in the world would you want that thing to be? I can tell you what mine is. Two things that drive me, two things I wish I could change, is number one, when people have an inaccurate view of God because of an inaccurate church. That drives me insane. And the other thing is when people make decisions that undermine their future. When I see people do that, it drives me nuts. It is the reason I'm a pastor. It is the reason I preach the way I do. It is the reason I say the things I say. I know sometimes I really, really push the lines and I really dig into other churches and stuff. But you got to understand, one of the things that drives me is I hate people having an inaccurate view of God. I just literally sat down and had coffee with somebody this week that said, I grew up in the church, but I feel like the veil was covering my eyes and I wasn't told the truth and I wasn't told the reality of who Jesus was. And I have so much regret and guilt. I hate those conversations because I feel bad for that person and I wish I could have gotten to them quicker.
And I hate it when people make decisions, and I see it all the time. People make relationship decisions and financial decisions and job decisions that I just know are, it's going to undermine their future and it's going to hurt them. And here we go. And I'm like, yeah, here's what's going to happen. I can see the dominoes, and I hate that. And so at the end of my life, and I've seen it happen. At the end of my life, I want people to line up and shake my hand or my kids' hands like they did at Jim Dillo's funeral. When Tim Dillo's dad passed away, his father, Jim, he was a friend of mine. He was a supporter of this church. He was a mentor. And when he passed away, I watched as people lined up and went up to Tim and Jeff, and they shook their hands and they said, I just want you to know that I knew who Jesus was because of your daddy. And I watched as people came and they went to their grandkids and they went to Tim's kids. They went to Lane and Keegan and Camden. And they said, let me tell you something about your dad. There was a time when I was down, when I was out, and I needed somebody. And your granddaddy was that man for me. And he cared about me and he prayed with me and he was there for me and he supported me. I want to thank you very much for allowing him to do that. That's what I want to be. One day, I hope that's what my kids hear. Because here's the thing. If it's not that, if it's not something like that, I've been to those other funerals. I've been to those other funerals where nobody has anything to say because there's nothing to tell. And so somebody gets up and they're like, well, his favorite candy bar was a Reese's. And he loved to watch Breaking Bad in his underwear. I mean, that's about all we had to say. That's about it. Share his favorite beer and share his favorite show and how much he loved the Dallas Cowboys. And I don't know, close the lid and put him in the ground. At the end of your life, when your life is nothing more than a story to tell, what story do you want told? What do you want people to come up to your kids and your grandkids and thank you for? What is it that breaks your heart? Here's what I know, and I think I'm guilty of it, and I think my friend that I was talking about is guilty of it. I think some of you are guilty of it. Here's the thing. A lot of us in this life, we are chasing happiness. We're chasing happiness. We're trying to be all the things. Be the best spouse. Be the best parent. Give our kids the world. We just throw caution to the wind. Who cares about the budget? Who cares about whether we should or not? Can we? Can we? Let's figure out a way. Can we? Let's figure out a way. Let's do that. Yeah, let's try. And we're chasing happiness. But let me tell you something. I've sat with enough people now who have chased happiness. And what they found is sadness. And here's what I think is missing. You chase happiness and you'll miss purpose. But the other way around, if you chase purpose, that's how you really truly find happiness. What breaks your heart? Now here's the good news and the bad news, okay? Good news is when you figure out what breaks your heart, you're probably not going to have to go and fix an economy. Nobody's got to rebuild a temple. Although we've got some work projects around the church we'd like to share with you. Nothing too big. You're not going to have to rebuild any city gates or anything like that. Okay, all right. You're not even going to have to quit your job. Good news. Here's the bad news, though. Whatever breaks your heart, if you go and choose to do something about that, you're probably going to have to say no to something. See, again, millennials, and golly, Christian millennials are so bad about this. What many of you will do is you will go home and you'll be inspired or convicted from a sermon and you'll get your family together and be like, I really felt, called. God was speaking to me today. So here's the thing, guys, we got to do another thing. Okay? We need another thing. Okay, so they need somebody to clean the church, and then they need somebody to do this. They need somebody to serve in the toddler department. They need, okay, and I feel what's going on with the mobile food market. That breaks my heart, so I'm going to go serve at the mobile food market. And here's the thing. We're going to add another thing to the list. That's what Christians do. Millennial Christians, we go, okay, best spouse in the world, best body in the world, best sex in the world, best stuff in the world, have the best kids with the best opportunities. Oh, that sermon really convicted me. Okay, be the best Christian and be all that I can be. Okay, that's okay. Another thing to the list. I'm not asking you to add another checkbox to your list. It's not what I'm asking you to do. It's not what you should do. I'm telling you that if you want to address what breaks your heart, if you want to find purpose, you're going to have to say no to something. Not just jam another thing in there. You're going to have to say no. You're going to have to say no to some invitations. You're going to have to say no to, oh my gosh, this would be the craziest thing in the world, and it'll be so hard for you. You're going to have to say no to some opportunities, which I know in our culture, don't ever pass up an opportunity. I'm telling you, if you're going to address this, you're going to have to say no to some opportunities. You're going to have to say no to an increase in your schedule. You're going to have to say no from going from one feeder soccer team to another feeder soccer team for another 12 weeks. Okay? You might have to say no in order to say yes to what breaks your heart. You may even have to tell me no. And that's okay. If I come to you and I say, hey, could you help us address this? And you say, no, we cannot. We will not add another thing to our schedule. I will applaud you. I will not tell you you're going to hell. Okay? Contrary to popular belief. Okay? I won't do that. I'll say, good for you. Look at you. Good job. Good job. No. But here's the other part. You're probably going to have to leave your comfort zone. Because addressing what breaks your heart, it is not going to be convenient. It is not going to be easy. It may not even be in your wheelhouse. Addressing what breaks your heart, being an advocate, speaking out, oh, I guarantee you it's going to be uncomfortable. I guarantee you if you have a concern for this next generation and you go, man, somebody needs to help these kids. Somebody needs to be there for them. Cool, do you want to volunteer at youth group on Wednesday night? What? No. That sounds very uncomfortable. Yeah, but maybe that's what you're supposed to do. Sometimes that's what a call is. And the other thing is you're probably going to have to sacrifice something. And that word sacrifice, see, it's crazy, right? When we're chasing happiness, when we're chasing our pursuit to be the best parent, the best spouse, have all the things, all the opportunities, we will sacrifice everything to chase happiness. We will blow the budget up. Well, we shouldn't do that. I don't think we can afford that. That would go beyond our budget. That would be living with outside of our means. Oh, but it's on sale. But it's a 2-for-1 trip to Banana Fana Novana. You know, like, come on, man. You know, like, come on, like, take an opportunity here. You know, you can't pass this up. We will sacrifice everything to chase opportunity, to chase happiness. Let me tell you something. To find your purpose and to chase what breaks your heart, it will require the same sacrifice you're already sacrificing for your schedule, for your sports, for your goals, for your kids. It's just going the wrong way. But you're going to have to sacrifice something. But let me tell you something. Here's the good news. Whatever you lose in order to help someone else win, it won't feel like a loss for very long. Because let me tell you something. I've been there and I'm going through it. Again, I'm going to share with you my whole story over the next 12 weeks, because Kate and I, we have reordered some things. We have given up some things. I mean, you're all aware that we closed a campus this year. There's a story behind that, and I'm going to share it with you. And we've had to say no to some things, and there's some things we don't do anymore. And they were good things. They were not bad things. They were opportunities. They were money makers. They were all that stuff. But we've said no to some things. And let me tell you something. I don't miss it. Hearing stories like I did this week of what my little girl did, how she was generous and kind and there for somebody else, I go, yep, I'm exactly where we need to be. I'm glad Sunday mornings are a priority for us. I'm glad my kids are in the children's department. I am more than happy to tithe my 10% to fund this mission. If that is the end result, then yes, it's worth that sacrifice. Yes, it's worth my time. Yes, it's worth my energy. Yes, it's worth speaking up about. I don't miss the things that I've laid down over these last couple months, because I got my priorities in check of what truly breaks my heart. And that's how you find winning. That's how winning is done. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The value of a life is always measured by how much of it was given away. At the end of your life, when you're honored, when you're thanked, when stories are told about you, they won't talk about how much you got or how much you had. They will talk about how much of you was given away. Because that's what changes the world. That's what changes a life. That's how you find purpose. So, what breaks your heart? I don't expect you to have an answer, okay? You do not have to tell me at the door. And you can't steal my answer either, okay? That'd be cheating. I want you to think about it. You're going to discuss it in your small groups this week. I want you to talk about it on the way home. And look, you don't have to have a family plan, okay? If you're in the car and somebody goes, yeah, this is what breaks my heart, and your wife goes, okay, well, then we've decided as a family, this is what breaks our heart. You know, no, that's not what you have to do. You can have individual ones too, okay? But what breaks your heart? Now, here's going to be the thing that scares the bejesus out of you, okay? If you ask this question and you can't come up with an answer, that's a problem. And I mean this in the most loving, respectful way. If you can't come up with an answer to what breaks your heart, you are probably a very self-centered person. And you need to address that. You need to address that to find what you're looking for. Chase purpose, and you'll find happiness. Chase happiness, and you'll miss it. So what breaks your heart? God put these things in you. He pulls you and tugs you in that direction because he wants what's best for you, because he wants you to be fulfilled and to find peace and happiness. But you have to do it his way. The culture has lied to us. The culture has pulled us a certain direction and encouraged us a certain direction. But we will refuse to be lied to, and we will resist the urge. And through it, we will lead the next generation to a better place and greener pastures. And through it, we will have lives with stories that are worth telling in the future. Let me pray for you. Father God, as we come to you today, Father God, I pray that this question convicts us, stirs us, concerns us, inspires us. God, whatever it needs to do, let it do it. Let it go to work on us. Help us to find the answer. And if we can't think of anything, then God, we got some work to do. Then we need to look outside of ourselves and beyond ourselves and look at our place in this world and what you are trying to do in it. God, would this question help us find what it looks like to love God, to love others, and to ultimately, God, learn to love ourselves. In your name we pray. Amen.